Hello and warm welcome to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. Thanks for tuning in once more. It's Jack Reeve and Mark Langdon to guide you through proceedings this week. A hectic Champions League schedule to look back on. There's European football coming up as well, and a full preview for the Premier League fixtures this weekend. Alongside that, Dan Charles will be joining us, as always, for his EFL selections. But Mark, I mean, there feels an obvious start point this week. It feels like when we're writing these run orders, the intro into them can sometimes be questionable. We have to start with Manchester United. I know you were watching the game. They go from, what's the opposite of strength to strength? Whatever that is.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of one thing after the other, isn't it? Just in terms of I suppose bad luck, bad. And I think this was a bit of bad luck, actually, against Copenhagen. First half an hour, arguably the best that we've seen from them sort of all season. I know it's a low bar, but I thought they were well on top against a dangerous side that they made to look, ordinary. And, Copenhagen have caused Bayern problems, Galatasaray problems and United previously. So I thought they started very well. Then the red card comes. I thought it was a red card. I think if you end up, even if it is by accident, stamping on somebody's ankle, then, you probably are going to get a red card. Then they had a really bad spell and they still recovered from that and played, I thought, reasonably well with 10 men until the point when they went 3-2 up. And then Copenhagen, maybe with nothing to lose, started throwing loads of players forward. And those last two goals, Wan-Bissaka, Varane, Maguire and Dalot, I think in those two goals, I think they all made mistakes. Like, not, across the two goals, they made errors. And, I think we've put a lot of blame on Ten Hag for the right reasons, really. And that their style of play hasn't been good. He's made some questionable signings and some questionable decisions. I didn't think that one last night was on him so much. Now he will, he will be increasingly under pressure. That's just life as a Manchester United manager when you lose and you're really struggling to qualify for the last 16 of the Champions League. But I don't feel as down on United as what I maybe have done in other games this season. I think you could argue they played better than against Brentford and against Sheffield United. The result's just different, and even Fulham.
But even in those victories, Mark, they've been, far from convincing. And I guess the concern here is nothing seems to be getting any better.
No. Well, I saw shoots of recovery in the front four. Garnacho, Rashford, Fernandes and Højlund as the front four. I thought that they combined well for the first half an hour, and then Rashford was sent off, and there was pace on the wings. Fernandes was closer to Højlund. I felt he'd been very isolated, but defensively they've got injuries, but they've just got problems in that area, really. I'm not sure how you solve them, because he virtually used every single defender at his disposal sort of in this season. I don't think any of them have looked great. Even when you go back to like Lisandro Martinez, who is their best one, I think. Even he had shaky moments at the start of the season. The goalkeeper's been wobbly at times as well. So I don't know if it's a personnel issue. Protection's not amazing in midfield. I think that's fair to say. But these are not new things. I think last night I saw a team that was unlucky to lose, I think. But it's Man United. You just lost to a team from Denmark, struggling to qualify for the Champions League last 16. You're going to get it in the neck.
Look, we'll talk more about Manchester United later on in the show. Let's move over to Newcastle, Mark. Another English side, bottom of their Champions League group, a disappointing 2-0 defeat to Dortmund. And I guess this was probably one of the games they were targeting to get something from.
Yeah, I mean, they got a little bit of luck elsewhere, because Milan beating Paris Saint-Germain sort of really closed that group right up. It means there's probably now more chance of them finishing bottom than there would have been, and therefore they might not be in any European competition, but they've actually feels like they've got more chance of qualifying as well, and that's what you want. The injuries, I think, are a problem for them. And you asked me last week, you were shocked, wasn't you, when you asked me to sort of grade their ability to cope with, you know, going back to back to back to back. And I put it at a low score. I think it was like 5 out of 10, wasn't it? And that surprised you. And look, they came out and they beat Arsenal. They put so much into every game because of the way that they almost have to play, because that's their strength. Like, you see the best teams, they're able to conserve energy at times in games because they're so dominant. You just don't see that really with Newcastle. It's just harem scarem, like, for 90 minutes, and they run around, they put pressure on teams, and you know, they try to outwork them. And I just think that's really hard to do over 50 matches in a season. And the injuries are racking up for them now, but they're still in with a chance that they'll expect to beat Milan at home. It's just going away to Paris is a very difficult game when you haven't scored in the two easier away games in Milan and in Dortmund.
Yeah, there seems to be a growing theme of discussing injuries on this podcast. Let's discuss Arsenal and Manchester City, both of those sides winning their midweek European games. I guess, you know, with City, we've kind of been over this bridge before. Yeah, we'll leave that. But with Arsenal, Mark, I mean, you know, a good win for them and a fairly comfortable win. I guess the concern will be the amount of minutes that Saka's playing, and it does feel as if it's catching up with him physically.
Well, I mean, he was back to his, I suppose, more like his best in that Sevilla game. One assist, one goal. Premier League performances haven't been at the levels that I think we come to assume that Saka will deliver. And there probably is some sort of physical concerns there, because he again is somebody that he takes a right old whack, and it's something that Arteta's been moaning about. Does get fouled a lot, Saka as well, which isn't going to help him. In this game, the first goal would have really pleased Arteta, because Declan Rice wins the ball back high up the pitch. Jorginho, which is what Rice is in the team to do, Jorginho's in there to pick those passes, lays a lovely pass through to Saka, and then he played Trossard up front, and Trossard's at the end of it to tap into an empty net. Sevilla were abysmal. I mean, their only shot was in injury time. They had one corner. They made 8 changes. They got Betis, their local rivals, at the weekend, and the manager seemed to put more emphasis on that. But from Arsenal's point of view, you know, you shouldn't take any Champions League game win, you know, for granted, unless you're called Manchester City and you're playing young boys, when I think we all knew that how that one was going to finish before the game started.
Yeah, absolutely. Plenty more on all of these teams throughout the show. Let's get into our big match. Yeah, let's take a look at Chelsea against Manchester City. This one Sunday, 4:30, 4-1 Chelsea, 8-11 Manchester City, 14-5 the draw. Mark, I'm fascinated to hear about your experience of Monday night. You're obviously at the game between Spurs and Chelsea. Loads to talk about, but let's start obviously with a Chelsea point of view. They won that game convincingly. If you were to just look at the score, the game told somewhat of a different story. What were your overriding thoughts coming out of that regarding Chelsea?
Yeah, quite confused, I would say, which actually has been Chelsea since Todd Boehly took over, really. I mean, you've won 4-1 away to Tottenham. That's great. Jackson, who'd been criticised for not being in the right areas and not making the right runs, has scored a hat-trick. So you could look at that in isolation and just think, well, that's the most perfect 90 minutes. I think you're absolutely right, though. The reality was different. And like, Tottenham were so close to going 2-0 up with the Son goal that was ruled out for offside. I was at the other end, so impossible for me to have seen. I was quite low down as well. But if that goes in, I don't think you could have denied that Tottenham were kind of on top at that running all over Chelsea. Then you get a red card, a penalty, And then Van de Ven gets injured and Doggy gets sent off. And the game should have been easier for Chelsea because at 2-1, they get themselves in front. There's the Dier volley that goes in that, again, very close to just coming off just a Chelsea player. And then he's onside. You've got the Bentancur chance where he nearly gets onto it. And then the Son one as well, which is like the 94th minute. Like, Chelsea should not have, you should not be in that situation. But, you know, if you think back to when Tottenham played Liverpool, Tottenham struggled to sort of get past that low block when they were down to nine players. But Liverpool, by that stage, their threat was non-existent. And yeah, as it should be, really, for a Premier League team that's got eight outfield players. And Chelsea weren't coping that well with that. And I think that should concern Pochettino. He'll just be relieved that they've got the victory. But I still think there's just a lot of question marks. They're definitely, with 100%, Chelsea have played better and lost this season. We tipped them on the on Bets Club last week because it sort of felt like, you know, their luck would just turn at some stage. And I think that's what it was more than anything that they did particularly well. Just the breaks went their way and Tottenham lost their heads and Chelsea took advantage, but only just.
Someone that does seem to have settled in nice is Cole Palmer. You know, in a world of Chelsea chaos and transfer malarkey, you know, that seems to be somewhat of a shrewd bit of business.
Well, he's playing against his former club this weekend. I mean, it was shrewd business. I mean, for nearly 50 million, I don't know.
I've certainly, well, in terms of Chelsea.
Yeah,
standard.
maybe. I mean, he scored his penalties. I think I would rate Man City sort of judgment of a player over Chelsea's on sort of recent years. And if they were happy to sell him to Chelsea, that would suggest to me that they don't think he's at that sort of elite level. He has made a difference for Chelsea just in terms of the goals that he's been scoring. So I'm still not entirely sure sort of where he plays and what his best position is. But I suppose it's a big game for him. Yeah, absolutely, it's a big game for him. But hopefully this game on Sunday doesn't have as much VAR in it, Jack, because I'm not sure the Man City fans will be home before work on Monday.
Well, what was it like from within the stadium? Because, you know, having watched it on the television, there is a, when you've got kind of, you know, no dog in the race, a sense of, you know, the drama is always quite exciting. But I can imagine being a match-paying fan, it's just incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, it is a nonsense, absolute nonsense, because you don't see anything, like, you know. And so you and the players, but even the players are getting, you know, they're chatting to the referee, the coaches on the sidelines are kind of looking at their iPads. And, you know, the only people that are paid to be inside a stadium are the supporters, and they're getting the worst experience of anyone. And that just doesn't feel like it should be right. And it very, because I text you and said, oh, like the Romero red card, because on the screen they did go to show the incident and then sort of cut it at just the point where Romero clears the ball. So they didn't actually show the follow through on Fernandes. So there's a big boo that went up around the stadium. I haven't seen it since. Yeah, it is a red card. Doggy deserved his red card, and from what I'm told, could easily have been sent off before that. So I suppose if you've got VAR and you've had the mistakes previously, so you don't want to rush a decision, like what are you supposed to do? If there are just loads of tight offside calls. But I just, it just shows the folly of it, really. I just wish people would be more accepting of on-field decisions. And I think that actually referees are getting worse, because they're now, they feel like they've got this safety net of VAR, but then VAR only wants to get involved if it's clear and obvious. And then they go, well the referee hasn't given it, so I'm not going to give it. And I'm pretty sure that for instance, the Raheem Sterling handball, that you, if you remember that one, Jack, there were a lot of them. I mean, that was as clear as anything that came off his arm. I don't know how Michael Oliver didn't see that. And I'm almost certain that if there's no VAR there, he just gives handball. But he doesn't because he knows he's got that replay in the back, you know, to fall back on. And yeah, it's nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll have a discussion on next week's show about what the alternative could potentially be. Just in terms of Manchester City, Mark, I mean, fairly ominous for the rest of the Premier League, the fact that we haven't been talking too highly of them, and yet they're still top of the division.
Yeah, top of the league. Was it scored most goals, conceded the fewest? No De Bruyne yet. Yeah, I mean,
anyone can lay a glove on them? Because, you know, we've discussed, you know, Liverpool, maybe the challengers are Arsenal. But whenever I watch anyone else, like there's glimpses, but I just don't know if anyone can lay down the consistency required.
No, I think that's the key word there, consistency. I think over 90 minutes, Arsenal have already beaten them, Wolves have beaten them. You know, Liverpool have got them after the international break. Maybe they'll do some damage to City. But then the other teams have then got to do what City seem to do sort of all the time, and that is just mop up the really easy points. And, like, you know, was it about 10s on, like when they play Bournemouth, the game is feels like it's over before it's even started, and that's not always the case for some of the other teams. And, you know, I think over 38 matches, you know, you're seeing him rotate Foden and Grealish and Doku and Bernardo Silva, and if Haaland gets injured, they can play Alvarez up front, and they've got the mountain of centre backs. Yeah, it's going to be difficult, I think.
With all of that being said, how are you playing this match?
Well, Man City have drifted to around about sort of 4-5 mark, probably because of the John Stones injury. And I do think that City are a much better team, or a better team anyway, when Stones plays. But I still think they'll just move Chelsea around too much. So, yeah, I thought they were a fair price, Man City.
OK, good stuff. Let's get on to the rest of the Premier League action. We'll start with the early game on Saturday, 12:30, Wolves against Tottenham. Wolves 9-4, 13-5 the draw, 23-20 Spurs. We've discussed a bit of the Spurs-Chelsea game, Mark, but, you know, what's the kind of fallout of that with suspensions, injuries? I mean, you're obviously probably going into this game in a far worse state than you were going into Chelsea.
Yeah, in a weird way, they'd have been better off just losing 4-1 with 11 men and people saying, oh, it was a bad performance. And Romero...
That would have been no fun, though, would it?
Yeah, Romero, Van de Ven and Udogi being outstanding this season. Three of the back four missing. Madison, of course, is a doubt. It's a problem. And it's why I think that Wolves... You might as well take a chance on Wolves here. No Neto for them is an issue. Clearly, they were beaten by Sheffield United last week. Maybe that game didn't suit Wolves because, you know, the onus was on them, even though they're away from home, to attack, whereas we saw Tottenham with nine players will still defend on the halfway line, and sort of that might suit Wolves to be able to play sort of more on the break. And yeah, I just think with all of those, but and Tottenham's price has drifted. It's not like the bookmakers don't know that these players are out, but we've got no clue as to kind of just how much worse they'll be. And I just think, you know, Wolves have drawn with Newcastle, they've beaten Man City. They are a capable team. So, yeah, I'll take a chance on them at the prices.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Let's take a look at the 3 o'clocks. We'll start with Arsenal against Burnley. 2-11 Arsenal, 6-1 the draw, 16-1 Burnley. I mean, just struggling at both ends. I think that's fair to say with Burnley, but particularly in front of goal, just not scoring enough.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they won the shot count 17-4 against Crystal Palace last week, had 68% possession. But actually, if you look at their expected goals, they've only won, and I sort of put that in inverted commas, they've only had a higher figure than their opponents, according to fbref.com. Once this season, that was against Manchester United, actually, where they were chasing the game. I suppose the caveat there is it was Manchester United. So they're having a lot of the ball. They're not creating that many good chances, and they're conceding a lot of goals. That is the worst of all worlds, isn't it? You know, when all of that is happening together, and possession without penetration is pointless possession, really. And they're a team struggling at the moment, not with an identity, because I think Vincent Kompany knows exactly how he wants them to play. But there were, some people saying, well, the fixtures will get easier. And they did. But then they lost at Bournemouth and they lost at home to Crystal Palace, a Crystal Palace team that, Eze was only fit enough to start on the bench. So, if you're losing those games as well, that's a big problem. And I'm going to go for Arsenal to score in both halves, around about 11 to 10. Burnley have conceded in both halves in 8 of their 11 Premier League games so far this season. I know it doesn't work out exactly like that, but it just shows that they're just conceding too many goals.
Yeah, absolutely. Crystal Palace against Everton, 7-5 Palace, 23-10, the draw, 2-1 Everton. I think when you're going through your coupon, Mark, trying to construct some form of acca for the weekend, these are the games that are maybe difficult to decide.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of wanted to be with Everton, but that is reflected, I think, in the bookmakers' prices, really, that you've just read out there. And I'm not sure that they're a big enough price for me to get involved. So I'm going to go for a draw. I just think that Everton and, are going to make it difficult for Crystal Palace in terms of the way that they're going to defend. Have Palace got enough to break them down? Eze, from their point of view, is he fully fit yet? You might not see the best of him until after the international break. And Everton are doing okay. 2 defeats in 8. I just, against Brighton last week, I watched that game. And once they scored, they just sort of defended for the rest of the match. And eventually, it sort of bit them on the bum because they conceded that own goal. Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be a low-scoring game. Brings the draw into play.
Okay, Manchester United against Luton. United 3's on, 17-4, the draw, 8-1 Luton. I mean, fair play to Luton, Mark, against Liverpool. A battling performance. I know Liverpool squandered, plenty of chances, but weirdly, I think both teams will come away from that going, oh, we should have won.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say Liverpool will be thinking they should have won more than Luton, given the chances that they created and missed. But it was a positive, really positive result for Luton, despite conceding that late goal. They weren't frequent on attacks, but when they were, they looked lively. Manchester United are not as good as Liverpool, but Luton are. I expect them to lose this game as well. I'm going to go for Højlund to score first, around about 4-1. Hasn't scored in the Premier League yet, but he's got 5 in the Champions League. So, I mean, that's just an anomaly that will sort of right itself after time. And if United play with the same vigour that they did in Copenhagen when they had 11 sort of players on the pitch, that should suit the striker. And I think sort of 4-1 for a Manchester United striker at home to Luton is fair enough.
Will there be thoughts in the back of the mind of Ten Hag, etc., going, first of all, good opportunity here. When we need wins, there's no real better opposition to be against. But if we were to lose this or not pick up a win, I mean, that is surely writing on the wall, isn't it?
I mean, before the international break, it's the worst time to have a result like that if you're a manager under pressure. So whether it would be enough to get rid, I don't know, because until Ratcliffe comes in, who's making the decisions? They might just wait until... But I think it'll be very difficult for him to remain too much longer if they don't beat Luton.
OK. Bournemouth against Newcastle. 4-1 Bournemouth, 3-1 the draw, 4-6 Newcastle. It feels as if, Mark, and I know we've discussed it at points on the pod this season, but with Burnley, Sheffield United and Luton, it feels like Bournemouth kind of escaped the relegation chat a little bit. And they're in really, turgid form.
They are. I'm going to go, though, for last week against Man City, just write that game off. I wasn't that surprised what the final score was. But I'm going to actually go for a Bournemouth or draw. Double chance here. I do agree, Jack, and Iraola hasn't managed to kind of weave the magic that we saw him do with Rayo in Spain just yet. But Newcastle, I'm thinking tiredness, injuries and suspension. And when you go through the list of players that are out, and it includes Guimaraes and Tonali, who are both suspended, Botman at the back, really important player, Isak, of course, has been out as well, so I'm not sure on his status. Those are really important. That's right through the spine of that Newcastle team, and I just feel like they're vulnerable. They might win because they're just better than Bournemouth, but I wouldn't be backing them at odds on to win that game just because of the amount of players they've got out.
Okay, on to Sunday's action. We'll start with Villa against Fulham. 4-7 Villa, 16-5 the draw, 9-2 Fulham. How are you playing this one?
Villa and under 3.5 goals. We're speaking before Villa have played AZ Alkmaar in the Europa Conference, and that might take a touch sort of out of the legs if Unai Emery goes strong, but they have won 12 in a row at home in the Premier League. Fulham's only defeat with more than 3 goals was against Manchester City. And if you remember that game, a lot of controversy around some of the decisions that went against Fulham on that occasion. I think Villa will win the game, bounce back from what was a disappointing performance and result at the City Ground last week. Fulham just haven't got anything up front, have they? So they're in games, they're well enough organised. They're solid in midfield, someone like Paulinho. Absolute rock, and you know there's a bit of quality with Willian, but just where are the goals coming from?
No, absolutely. On to the next then. Brighton, Sheffield United. Brighton falls on 19-4 the draw, 12-1 Sheffield United. And Mark, you know, I've been in the position of supporting a Premier League football club struggling for wins, and particularly that first win, it feels so far off. So for Sheffield United to pick that up, does it just relieve a little bit of pressure? Can they open up now and start to play?
It definitely does. I mean, I don't think it was a penalty, was it? That sort of okay, won
give them a little bit. Come on, they've gone this time without a win, and now you're poo-pooing their first victory.
Yeah, but I suppose they needed the helping hand. They'll maybe feel like they deserve some luck after conceding a lot of late goals in games this season. I wouldn't back Brighton at fours on, but I think it does show the kind of gap between the two teams. I was looking at Lewis Dunk, 20-1, first goal scorer, sort of an each way option. He takes some of the free kicks, doesn't take them all, but he sort of is on free kick duty at times. He scored against Liverpool already this season. He's also hit the bar. He had that one disallowed last week against Everton, marginal offside. A big threat, obviously, given his height at set pieces. And only Bournemouth have conceded more goals from dead ball situations than Sheffield United this season. So might be an area that Brighton looks to target.
Yeah, I love the sound of that. Let's take a look at Liverpool against Brentford. 2-5, Liverpool 4-1 the draw, 11-2. Brentford, where are we at with Liverpool, Mark? They run hot, they run cold. Was it just one of those last week where can count themselves slightly unfortunate?
Unfortunate up to a point. I still think that they should do enough to win that game and finish off those chances. And obviously Nunez, he was flagged offside, but he wouldn't have been offside. Just a sitter, really. And Brentford can be awkward opponents. And I think that Brentford will look and think that they could get a goal here on the counter-attack at least, because Liverpool do leave themselves open. And there's some pace in that Brentford sort of forward line. And they are kind of the big six slayers, aren't they? Because they've won at Man City. I mean, they drew at Arsenal. They've won at Tottenham in recent years. They seem to win at Chelsea every year. That said, I'm going to go for Liverpool and over 2.5 goals. Six of their 7 wins, Liverpool in the Premier League this season, have been over 2.5 goals. So, yeah, wouldn't be surprised if Brentford scored, but also, you know, Liverpool created enough to have put Luton away by many goals, actually. And if they carry on creating chances, they'll score because they've got a lot of quality in that front four.
Absolutely. Let's finish up the Premier League previews then with West Ham against Nottingham Forest. West Ham odds on 17-20, 13-5 for the draw, 3-1 Nottingham Forest. I must say, Mark, you know, it feels like I've discussed a lot of teams going under the radar in this podcast, but Forest feel like, you know, just quietly going about business and getting the job done.
Yeah, I mean, we're not talking about them in the relegation sort of conversation, are they, at the moment? I think there will be some people saying they've spent a lot of money. They've got good players, actually, sort of little old Nottingham Forest in sort of relative terms, in terms of the fact that they, you know, recently come up to the Premier League, that sort of last season. obviously won European Cups in the past. But I think there'll be some people thinking that actually they should be at that kind of level, kind of, you know, floating around mid-table. There'll be others that just say, as long as you're a Premier League team in May, you know, Steve Cooper's doing a great job. I can see both sides of that argument. I'm not quite sure where I fall on it yet. What we do know is that the four games they've lost this season are against Man City, Liverpool, Arsenal and Manchester United. So, yeah, it takes I'll use United in terms of their kind of the size of their club. It takes a good one to beat them. Whether West Ham are at that standard, probably not. And can't really work West Ham out. A team that's now actually on a bad run, having been on a good run in terms of the Premier League not that long ago. I thought both teams would score a shade of odds on around about 8 to 11. I just think with West Ham, they're quite a defensive team, but they're not keeping loads of clean sheets. And Forest have got a goal in them. And if they actually play on the front foot, I could see them scoring. But also, you know, West Ham, with the quality they've got, Paquetá and Bowen, it could be a sort of difficult 90 minutes for Forest defenders as well. So not a game I'll be having a bet in myself, but if you do want one, I'd say both teams to score.
OK, there we go. That's your Premier League card, Mark. Let's catch up with Dan Charles for all things EFL.
If you want some free football bets this season, we've got you covered. Simply head to racingpost.com/free bets and there you'll find over £200 worth of them for you to use this season. That's racingpost.com/free bets.
Yeah, always great to chat to Dan Charles. It's all kicking off in the EFL at the moment, so really looking forward to seeing what you're tipping up this weekend, Dan. As always, we start with a team in focus. What league, what team are we looking at this week?
I'm going to look at Fleetwood this week. So it's third from bottom in League One at the moment, so you kind of think, looking at the table, they're struggling. They've had a tough start, but I'm looking at how they've done since the change managers, sort of late in September. Early September, when Scott Brown was removed and Lee Johnson came in, they've actually improved quite a bit. I mean, you look at Fleetwood's early season, got 1 point from the first six games, shocking start under Scott Brown. And he did all right for them, to be fair, last season. Had a good first season in management. But Lee Johnson, with a bit more experience, has come in there. And even though they're third from bottom, you look at their form since he's gone in. They've won three, drawn three, lost three. Some of them games as well. They've been against, you know, pretty tough fixtures. Got the last two games, they got a 2-2 draw at Barnsley, a 3-3 draw at home to Blackpool as well. Two teams that are kind of looking to compete for promotion. I'm looking at their cup form. He's got progress in the EFL trophy. They won their group there. They won 2-1 at Kidderminster in the FA Cup, which doesn't sound like an amazing result, but they absolutely dominated that game, you know, on the shot count, sort of 20-odd shots to not many at all in return. So, no, they're looking at the squad that they had. They were probably underperforming at the start of the season. People like Jack Marriott, who's a very good striker really for that level, wasn't doing it early season. He's got 5 goals in his last 9 appearances. Junior Katerna, who's caught my eye on the highlight reels, and he's another attacking player. Looks like he's got a lot of ability. He got an unbelievable double strike in the 2-2 draw at Barnsley. He's injured at the moment, so kind of for your bets and that, worth looking out for when he comes back, because he's a really exciting player. But in general, Fleetwood, although the third from bottom, I don't see them getting relegated. I think they'll be fine this season.
OK, team to keep an eye on, Fleetwood Town. Three selections, Dan, for our viewers, as always, across the divisions of the EFL. What's your first?
We're going to start off. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily call it a coupon buster, but I'm going to go with Charlton to avoid defeat away to Portsmouth. I mean, Portsmouth at the top of League One, one of only two undefeated teams in the EFL alongside Mansfield. So they've had a great start to the season. But, you know, you've always got to try and look for when to get against any side. And I watched quite a bit of their game at Chesterfield in the FA Cup first round last week. And they were really poor in that game, lost 1-0 to the National League leaders. Chesterfield played really well, you've got to give them credit. But Portsmouth, they have had a few injuries sort of building up. They lost another two players during that game, Tino Angerin and Regan Paul. Regan Paul is a really influential defender for Portsmouth. They both went off injured. They're not going to be available this weekend. So they're now going into a game against Charlton. Their odds on to win that game. Charlton have actually improved quite a lot under Michael Appleton. They've only had two defeats in 11 games under him. They did have a shocking result in the cup last weekend, but he made 11 changes for that game. So it's not going to be anything like the team he's going to put out for the weekend. And I think Charlton, you know, given their upturn in league form, you know, there's a good chance they can get a result. So Charlton will draw double chance is the bet for me at odds against.
Okay, that's the first. What's up next?
And two starting with first the two League Two bets now. Going to go with MK Dons to win away to Newport. MK Dons in mid-table at the moment, but they're going to have ambitions to do a lot better than that. They've looked for kind of an improvement in style and results, you know, by changing managers. Graham Alexander, he lost his job, and they brought Mike Williamson in, who's very much a sort of possession-based manager. And the club have had like a style of play, a possession-based style of play for a few years now. So I'm not quite sure why they appointed Alexander, as he's not known for that playing style. But they've gone for Williamson now, who's done a great job at Gateshead in the National League. And there's already signs that it's starting to work. They had two home wins in a row, beat Bradford 4-1 and Swindon 3-2. In the FA Cup, he made a few changes and they lost 2-1 at Reading. But I do think they're going the right way. And they're up against the Newport side, who've got a lot of injuries at the moment. Fifth from bottom in the league under Graham Coughlan. And they've only won two of the last 11 league games. So great chance for MK Dons to win a game there for me. And 13-10 looks a really juicy price.
Yeah, big price about MK Dons. The third and final for this week, Dan.
Third and final is Morecambe away to Grimsby. Morecambe in sixth place, Grimsby in 21st. I mean, just an immediate look at the prices, and Morecambe are 12-5 to win, 6-4 draw no bet. I mean, you can't always just go by a league table, so I'll give you a bit more, you know, context to why I like the bet. I mean, Morecambe, although they're a small budget in League Two, they are making a very decent fist of trying to get straight back up to League One after the relegation. Derek Adams stayed on as manager. He's rebuilt the squad, you know, impressively. Among the players he lost, Cole Stockton went, didn't he? Left for Burton. He was getting a lot of their goals last season. But he's got Michael Mellon in on loan from Burnley. He stepped up, got 9 goals in 14 league games. Looks a natural finisher. They're improving all the time. Got 4 wins in their last 5 league games. They got a 2-1 FA Cup win away to League One Lincoln last weekend. So going really, really well. And they're against the Grimsby side, who recently... Paul Hirsch lost his job there. Ben Davies and Sean Pearson have taken in as over at the moment as joint caretaker managers. They've got no winning 7 at the moment. They sort of laboured to a 1-1 FA Cup draw away to Slough Town of the National League South. So they look a team to oppose, really, Grimsby. I would go for the draw no bet rather than the win price, because Grimsby do a lot better at home than away. 11 of their 14 points have come at home. So the preference, I think, given the prices there, you can get 6-4 for Morecambe draw no bet. That's the safest way to play it for me.
OK, so we've got Charlton, double chance away to Portsmouth, MK Dons to win at Newport, and Morecambe draw no bet at Grimsby. Dan, thanks as always.
You're welcome, Jack.
Yeah, let's round things up then with Mark's best bets for this week. Mark, we always like to provide our viewers with a bet builder. We'll start with that.
Yeah, I mean, I was frustrated with last week's one. I thought it was pretty close, but didn't land. So let's hopefully get it going this week, round about 9-1. So Wolves or draw, double chance. So Wolves not to lose against injury and suspension hit. Tottenham, you know, Wolves have done well in a lot of matches, actually, this season. And you sort of think they beat Man City, they drew with Newcastle. So even if Tottenham would have been at full strength, I think it would have been a difficult game. Given that Spurs have got a high line, I think this is a good opportunity for Hwang to score or assist in the game. Eric Dier played quite well, actually, against Chelsea, but he's not going to be suited by defending on the halfway line. And I at this sort of moment in time, I've got no idea who's going to partner him at the back. I know they won't be as quick or as good as Van de Ven. So opportunities sort of plenty for Hwang to sort of get in behind. And then to finish it all off, Semedo, the Wolves right back, right wing back, to be booked in the game. He's been booked already 5 times this season, and Brennan Johnson was taken off early on because Romero's red card against Chelsea. I thought he looked so lively. He was giving Reece James a right going over in the first 20 minutes or so. So if he plays at that level, then Semedo's got a tough afternoon on his hands.
Okay, great stuff. That comes in at around about 9-1. As always, shop about for best price. Let's get a treble for this weekend.
Yeah, not much in the Premier League stood out to me. So I am dipping, sort of treading on Charles's toes and dipping into the EFL, and particularly into League Two. So Stockport to win at Swindon. Now, Stockport are on this amazing winning run. It's going to stop soon. So I am always wary of backing teams that are kind of into double figures for winning sequences, because you know that it just can't go on. But Swindon, they actually look a decent price at Swindon. You know, they conceded 7 against Aldershot in the FA Cup last week, 3 defeats in a row. Not sure home advantage is worth that much, with, you know, the fans really not happy, and understandably so, with recent results. And, you know, Stockport got a lot of firepower in their ranks, so we're going for them. Another team with a lot of firepower in their ranks, and that's Wrexham to beat Gillingham. Wrexham had 8 shots on target in that very impressive win at Mansfield in the FA Cup last week. Stephen Clements is, did you know that Stephen Clements was the new Gillingham manager, Jack, or had that one escaped you?
No, I can't say. There's been, I've got my own issues at the moment, so I'm not dipping into Gillingham.
So, I mean, he's had a couple of matches in Cup so far. I'm not saying he's going to be a bad manager, but we just don't know, do we? And I think that Wrexham are starting to find a bit of form. So we've got Stockport and Wrexham, and then we're going to finish the treble with Milan to win at Lecce. Lecce, 5 defeats in 7 for them. A few injuries for the Rossoneri, but, you know, Milan showed they were able to overcome those by beating Paris Saint-Germain in the week. And I was really impressed with them the other week at Napoli when they drew 2-2, but were sensational in the first half and got 2-0 up and threw it away somewhat. But Lecce, obviously not as good as Napoli. So that treble again, Stockport to win at Swindon, Wrexham to beat Gillingham, and Milan to win at Lecce.
OK, time for your best bet, Mark. What's the nap?
I'm going to go for Arsenal to score in both halves, 11-10 against Burnley. Man City, the only team not to have conceded at least twice at the Emirates this season. And the game I'm looking at in terms of like what this might be similar to was when PSV went to Arsenal in the Champions League earlier on this season. They played nice football. They were wide open and they got absolutely smashed 4-0. And I mean, Burnley do that even worse than probably PSV do. They are too open. And, you know, Arsenal will, I expect, pick them apart with relative ease. And so, you know, you can never be sure when the goals will come. But if you think they're going to score a fair few, then that's at least one way of playing it. So Arsenal to score in both halves at 11-10.
Great stuff, Mark. Thanks, as always. What's I suspect you're needing a few days rest, are you, after your hectic week? You've had television appearances and at Tottenham Stadium and all of that good stuff.
I was on Stan Sport in Australia on Wednesday night, doing, yeah, Spurs, Chelsea on Monday, with all that VAR, got in after midnight twice this week already, which is not perfect. And this weekend, actually, it's I've got two, I think I've said this before, I've got two sets of twins for nieces and nephews. It's one of those sets. Birthday, they don't live particularly close, and we've actually got to leave because I've got to taxi my mother-in-law, and she's not around in the morning. So I've actually got to leave around about the same time Tottenham are kicking off at Wolves. So I just hope that the wife, kids and mother-in-law enjoy the radio, because it's going to be 90 minutes of Wolves against Spurs. So, yeah,
I must say, I've got their AirPods. I do enjoy what following along to the football on the radio. I think there's something quite nostalgic about it.
I like it if it's other teams, but, you know, when the option to watch your team is there, like, you know, you can't go to the stadium, it's on TV, like, and you can't watch it, like, that's annoying. That's really annoying, particularly these days, because if you're in a pub or, you know, a restaurant, you get mobile phones and various other things. Like, this driving is the only one really now. Like, travelling is, but by car, because even, you know, on a train, just get your mobile phone out and watch it. So you can imagine how I took the news when I was told what time we had to sort of set off.
My thoughts are with you. There we go. Thanks to Mark. Thanks to Dan Charles. As always, we'll be back after the international break. If you are betting this weekend, please remember to do so with money that you can afford to lose. Always gamble responsibly. We'll see you again in a few weeks' time for another episode of Mark Langdon's Bets Club.